This is Monty in the Morning, the show Phoenix Magazine readers voted number one talk radio show in Arizona.
Number one during your morning commute.
Number one whenever news breaks during your day.
And number one whenever and wherever you want to talk sports.
Now it's time for Monty in the Morning.
Hey, yo, happy Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Make sure you go ahead and smash that subscribe button on YouTube. We are live on YouTube every morning, and again, we're seeing it a lot because this week it comes to an end on Periscope. Our final shows on Periscope today, tomorrow, and Friday, and then we're off of Periscope for good, and we are full on at YouTube. Yesterday, record-breaking day for this very show on YouTube. Really appreciate everybody who watched and takes part in the show. Please find us on YouTube. Just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And if you get on YouTube right now and you just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, all of our content comes up. The easiest way to find us on YouTube is to go to themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Jake, where shall we kick off this fine here program? I understand that you were in your leather recliner smothered in peanut butter watching the Brooklyn Nets and your boy Kevin Durant last night.
Yeah, bro. I was watching that game, and what struck me was that, you know, Kevin Durant goes...
No, you didn't deny the peanut butter or leather chair thing.
Okay, I can't deny the leather chair thing. I can confidently deny the peanut butter thing, though, okay? And actually, no, we'll talk about it later. Anyway, the Brooklyn Nets. So last night I'm watching this game, and it's been a conversation since the three of them started playing together, Harden, KD, and Kyrie. But the thing I noticed last night is Kevin Durant just doesn't see the ball. Like, he'll go, like, 15 minutes without really even, you know, getting a good look on offense when Kyrie and Harden are on the floor. And I hope that he's okay with that. You know, I don't know. I don't know how all that's going to work. I mean, luckily enough for the Nets, Kyrie was able to put up like 37 to 40 points last night with all the time that he had with the ball. So it's not as big of an issue, but there are going to be nights where Kyrie does not put up those numbers, but still takes those shots. We've seen that. And that is going to be an issue. And so then, that's the offensive side of the ball, which is hardly the problem. The defensive side of the ball is where they really struggle. And, you know, and they're playing a good team like the Clippers last night, and that game comes right down to it because they're not a good defensive team. I will say that Harden has improved, but Kyrie is still somebody who only really ever gives, like, half effort on defense a lot of the time, you know, and it's just a big question mark. I think Kevin Durant... I think you can rely on Kevin Durant to play good defense when it matters most. There are going to be times where he's not going to foul a guy that maybe you'd want him to foul, which is fine because at the end of the day, he's going to go down on the other end and hit the dagger three that you need to win the game. So it's fine. But at the end of the day, defense is really where they struggle.
Yeah, and I think that'll be the entire question as to, are the Brooklyn Nets better than the LA Lakers? And I know a lot of people want to talk about that. And I understand that is the conversation in the NBA, and rightly so. When you go out and you make a splash like, hey, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, all those guys are healthy now. I mean, Kyrie's over the flu he got at the club, which is good. He's back. I love it. But the questions about the Brooklyn Nets are going to be pretty simple. Has Joe Harris lost his rhythm because he's lost his role? And are they going to be able to defend well enough to compete with the Lakers? Because the one thing that really worries you is the Anthony Davis matchup for the Brooklyn Nets. If these two behemoths do wind up in the NBA Finals against each other, can Jeff Green be counted on to play Anthony Davis, which I think he probably can? And what happens to DeAndre Jordan in that situation? Mm-hmm. I think those are things that are really, really interesting. But my other question is, are the Nets going to get to the Finals, and will that roster remain what it is today?
Right.
And will they have these big three? And I don't know. I think Kyrie Irving, I watched pretty much all that Nets game last night, and Kyrie Irving has to have the ball in his hand, I think, to be validated. And that's going to be a problem for Harden and Durant.
Yeah, he's not a guy that you can say, okay, he can't be a traditional point guard. And this is why I have trouble putting him in the point guard category, because he's not a point guard. He is a shooting guard. He is a guy that is one of the best one-on-one players the league has ever seen. Second only, in my opinion, to guys like KD and Jordan and the likes of them. And so when I look at this team, they're desperate for a guy who's humbler and will get the offense going. When Kyrie was out, Harden and Kevin Durant had a really nice thing going. And so I'm not going to sit here on this show and wish for someone to get hurt or not play or any ill will. But I'm just telling you, this team gets better if Kyrie Irving's not on the floor because they have way more cohesiveness. Joe Harris is an absolute savage from three. And by the way, he made a couple shots last night. I mean, he is trying to find his role here in his groove on the floor. But overall, I'm just telling you, when I think of the big threes, you know, that we've seen in the league over the years, think about the Celtics, right? It took the Celtics a minute to figure out how they were going to do it with Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Rajon Rondo. The cool thing is Rajon Rondo is not a scorer. He's a facilitator. And so that's why that whole thing worked. And that's the biggest difference between him and Kyrie. Kyrie's a better player, but he's probably not taking you to a championship because I believe you made this point a couple weeks ago when we talked about this. Kyrie hasn't been back to the finals since he went with LeBron. And that's a pretty big indictment on Kyrie. So...
yeah, I think that Kyrie is never going to be the best teammate in the league. He's not a guy that you're ever going to look at and say, man, I have a chemistry problem. We better go get Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. Like that's just not who this bro is. But who Kyrie Irving is he's one of the best on-the-ball guards in the history of the NBA. There's no question about that. He's got the handles. We saw that, you know, whirling dervish Euro step into, a corkscrew layup, like, nobody else in the NBA does that on a regular basis, and Kyrie Irving does. And I think there's value in that. I just don't know that there's enough value in that to keep him on a championship team. Because for better or for worse, I don't know that there's any other way to describe the Brooklyn Nets right now. This is a championship caliber team. Mm-hmm. They're built to win a championship. They have the skill set to win a championship. This has become a three and okay, let's try to play D-League. And that's exactly who the Brooklyn Nets are. And so I think the biggest question will be as we head for February, March, April, and into the playoffs, is Kyrie Irving going to be able to keep himself together? Because I want to be gentle saying this. I think it's a really serious conversation. Something doesn't sit well with me with Kyrie Irving. Like there is something wrong there. I don't know if he battles demons in his head. I don't know if he is just one of those guys that's a malcontent or a prima donna. There's something wrong. When you want to break up with LeBron and then he goes on and wins championships and you go straight down the hill, you go to Boston where you got laughed out of TD Bank Garden and now you're in Brooklyn. And when you left, they went and got James Harden and they were better without you. I think it's a problem. Yeah. He is not a guy. And again, I want to be gentle about this. Kyrie Irving's not a guy that I would ever have on my team.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful basketball player. But he's just a little off. He gives you that, you get that sense of insecurity when Kyrie Irving's on your team.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of entitlement that goes with that as well from Kyrie. I think I know based on his actions, he thinks he's better than everybody. And he thinks he can do whatever he wants. And so that's why I say, this team was not built to play defense, by the way. If you look at the coaching staff, you've got Steve Nash, you've got D'Antoni, and you've got a bunch of other guys who are offensive-minded people. And so this team is all about scoring points, which is why you see them lose to the Wizards in a 140-point contest, for both sides. But then they come back against the Clippers, and they win another close game. And so, I do think they should be the team that represents the East this year. Will they get there? I don't know. That really depends on chemistry. That really depends on their ability to play half-court basketball because that's what the postseason is all about. And at the end of the day, it really depends what the roster is when you get to the postseason. Because let's say that KD has some kind of injury, who knows what you're going to be at that time? I think people instinctually think we're deep into the NBA season. We're not.
No.
I mean, we're not even halfway yet. So that's where I'm like, okay. Yeah, I love watching the Nets. I've always been a Kevin Durant fan. And yes, they should be in the finals, but I can't sit here and confidently say, hey, yeah, they're going to be in the finals. Like, we need to see this team go through the rigors of a postseason before I can say, okay, yeah, they're battle-tested. They know what's up. Does Steve Nash know how to handle when they're getting their ass handed to them and they go, they get handed a 14-0 run and, you know, they, when do you call timeout? When do you not? Like, all that stuff is in play. And so that's why I think we still need to see a lot of that from them.
Yeah, and I also think we learned a lot about the Utah Jazz last night. I think there's no doubt, A, that you should smash the subscribe button right now on YouTube. Make sure you find us, themontyshow.com. M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. It'll take you right to our YouTube channel and hit that subscribe button. I think the Utah Jazz showed us something last night. Now, granted, it was the Detroit Pistons. Let's not get cray over the Detroit Pistons.
Right.
Because, frankly, they're not a very good basketball team at this point. But the Jazz needed a win. And they needed a convincing win. And they needed to play Jazz basketball winning that game. And they very much did. And I give them a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at what we saw from the Jazz last night, shoot the three ball well, play good defense. And I have been a vocal opponent of Royce O'Neal's. I think he's playing much better basketball now.
Mm-hmm.
I still wouldn't have him in my starting five, and I still think they need a significant upgrade,
mm-hmm.
and they need to find a legitimate, consistent number two option to Donovan Mitchell. Royce O'Neal has really picked up his game, and I give him a lot of credit for that. And I feel like when we look at the Utah Jazz and we look at the way that they've played basketball, this last night was who I think this team is. Rudy Gobert, limited minutes. He only plays just short of 30 minutes. You know, doesn't have a huge impact. Plays really good defense. Gives you, I think, 9 points or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But you have four other starters and Jordan Clarkson in double digits, led by Donovan Mitchell. That's who this Utah Jazz team is. But here's my question. I don't think it's good enough to beat the Nuggets. I know it's not the Lakers or the Clippers.
Right.
At their best, where are the Jazz in the Western Conference?
I think they're third or fourth. They're tied with the Nuggets. I think it's the Lakers, the Clippers, then Nuggets slash Jazz in that slot, depending on the game. That's where I think they are.
Well, and if that's the case, I think you have to go out and make a change. Because we've seen the Clippers now battle late in games. We're starting to see Paul George really get back to that alpha male presence. Now, can he stay healthy? That's been an issue the last 2 years.
Right.
But we're starting to see that Paul George is becoming that guy that the Clippers went out and got. And this is why it's so important that they have a number two. And I think it's that important because we're seeing that Kawhi Leonard's not always on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Was brutal for Kawhi. His shot is... I mean, he's been known to have a really flat shot, like his shot is like a line drive almost, but last night, I mean, he give the guy credit. I mean, he has zero recall memory in terms of missing shots and that hurting his confidence. He'll just keep shooting. But at the same time, you know, you've got a guy in Paul George who is an absolute sniper and one of the best shot makers in the league. You know, he made a really difficult shot from the left corner towards the end of that game to make it close again, and that was pure. And so, yeah, for the Jazz, they need something. They need – Donovan needs a partner. And I think once that happens, it takes the heat off of Rudy. It pushes guys like Royce O'Neal further down the roster, which is really what you need. You need a number two to Donovan Mitchell who can go out and get a bucket whenever. Dude, you don't have that right now. And this is where we always wind up getting to. Because you don't have that puts the magnifying glass on Rooney more because he's getting paid so much money. And, you know, defenses understand that if we stop Donovan, we're probably going to win the game, which they didn't do last night. So it's just this team needs it desperately. They're one of the teams in the league that does not have a roster that's championship caliber. I don't care if they can get to the postseason. It's not good enough anymore. Now we're talking about, hey, what are we going to do to win the Western Conference? Hey, what are we going to do to at least make a finals appearance? I think making a finals appearance is good enough for this organization right now.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this Jazz team evolves. I think it's going to take incredible stones for the Jazz to keep this roster the way it is. I think it's going to be really difficult to sell fans that this roster is good enough to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially with what we saw in the bubble, the incredible performance that we saw out of Donovan, that crushing moment where Mike Conley took that three that went out when Donovan was wide open on the opposite wing, That can never happen on this team.
Yeah.
If you're going to lose with somebody, lose with Donovan Mitchell.
And that's why I think a lot of people, you know, when we talk about teams that aren't quite ready to win yet, like the Suns or like the Jazz, you know, they make mistakes like that where, like, the Suns the other night, what did they do? They got Devin Booker the ball, and what did he do? He knocked the shot down to beat the Mavericks because that's what big-time players do.
Yes.
But then you've got the Jazz not getting the ball to Donovan Mitchell, and that doesn't allow him to make the big-time shot and be the big-time player. So the Jazz, if you're a fan, the Jazz are a bit frustrating. There's no doubt about it. They're a team that should be better. They're trying to sell you on a package that they are better, and they're not better. They're just not better yet. They need another guy.
Well, and I think some interesting comments. You know, Ben says, you guys are always so anti-Jazz. What is the point? I don't think we're being anti-Jazz. I think we are – I'm a big believer in truth-telling. And, you know, we used to be known as the Truth in Sports Radio because we don't hedge. We don't spin. The Jazz are not good enough to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
Should you support this team? Absolutely.
They're a really good team.
Yeah.
It's not like they're a bad team.
But – Are we here to be a really good team?
Are we here to give out the little blue ribbon as kid soccer player get for the Jazz team? Like, is that what we're here to do?
We don't do participation points.
I mean, are we here to say, hey, like, cool, like, yeah, great game, Donovan, great game, Rudy, like, you guys are the best. Hope you enjoy making that $100 million contract.
And I think that's a tough pill for a lot of Jazz fans to swallow. I look at the way that the Jazz fans are rabid fans. They're some of the best fans in the NBA.
No doubt.
You know, we talked about on the show yesterday, courtside Karen and LeBron. Well, all of that, I mean, one of the most notorious courtside issues was Russell Westbrook several years ago against a Jazz fan. And the Jazz fan lost. And I disagreed with that. And I think it's fine to be passionate. Jazz fans are the best Jazz, in my opinion, one of the best fan bases in the NBA.
Yeah.
But you have to be real. And I always say this, you have to know who you are and where you are as an organization if you truly want to win. You have to be able to make really tough decisions, and you have to be able to really diagnose the guys on your roster. And right now, in my opinion, I don't think that Rudy Gobert and Royce O'Neal belong on a championship team. I think Rudy Gobert has a role on this team. There's no doubt about that. It ain't $41 million a year worth of a role. That contract was a mistake. So Ben, with all due respect, I understand why you feel like we're always negative, but it's not negativity. It's truth. And the truth is that Rudy Gobert is making $41 million, and he's not going to finish that contract on this roster. He is no different than Enes Kanter. The difference is Enes Kanter was a great offensive player who couldn't stop anybody, and Rudy Gobert is a great defensive player who can't score. That's the God's honest truth. And a lot of people will tell you, and I've had this argument, we talked about this the other day on Twitter, oh, he's a double-double machine. Cool. But when you're in the NBA, those double-doubles can't be clean up the garbage and tip dunk because he's useless the last 5 minutes of the game.
When you're getting paid $200 million, it can't just be 20 and 11 every night. It's got to be more. It's got to be more influential. There's a difference. And this is a minutia thing that maybe not a lot of fans get. I don't know. But like getting 20 and 11 on cleanup is great. That's a great contribution, and Rudy consistently gives it. But if LeBron came out and gave you 20 and 11 without making a jump shot and without playing with his back to the basket and without one of those 20 points being a bucket at the end of the game to seal the game, would LeBron James be LeBron James? No, he would not. And that's why I'm saying Rudy Gobert as your third option is phenomenal, right? As your wingman, not phenomenal, not good enough. You got to have more flexibility because I got news for you. NBA defenses know exactly how to stop the Jazz. And it's really, that's why we see the Jazz rely on three so much, because they get pigeonholed into shooting those threes.
Well, and I think the other thing that's becoming a trend, and I don't know how many people are paying attention to this with Rudy Gobert, three straight games under 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at who those teams are, you know, it's Dallas, Denver, and Detroit. And what do those teams have in common? They have bigs that run and play the perimeter. And I know that, again, here was another huge debate on Twitter about Rudy Gobert last night or yesterday. Did Porzingis get the best of Rudy Gobert?
I mean, I would say he did, but
I don't know how you say he didn't, right? I mean, they destroyed the Mavericks, 120-101 or whatever.
It was a dominant victory, yeah. There's no doubt.
But I feel like that if you look at those matchups, I feel like there were moments in that game where Rudy Gobert just didn't have a matchup.
Yeah, so last night I'm watching the Jazz, and you know I'm not the biggest Twitter guy, but I felt compelled to put videos on my Twitter feed about live game shots of Rudy Gobert losing Plumlee last night on defense, and both times it leads to an easy bucket, both times, and yes, he is trying to play help defense, but one of the times he just straight up loses contain on Plumlee, and it's one of those situations where if you just watched a Jazz defensive possession where it's not a fast break situation. It's half court basketball. Rudy Gobert floats around the paint. That's all he does. He doesn't really stick to his guy because he understands that he's long enough to make up the ground typically. But against athletic bigs, Porzingis, Jokic, Jeremy Grant.
Plumlee had 17 Plumlee, and 14 last
that's
night.
That's why I'm saying it's not like he shut down Plumlee. Plumlee had a nice night last night. Now, they obviously, the Jazz were fine in that game, but my point here is that if we're talking about, if Ben on Twitter is going to say, hey, why are you guys always negative? Well, really take a hard look at who Rudy Gobert is. If you just look at the numbers, sure, the numbers, you can make the numbers justify what he gets paid. But if we're going by wins and if winning is the goal for any franchise in the league, Rudy Gobert should not be making that much money.
You can't be 9.7 boards in 29 minutes and be a minus -7 against
good.
The Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
Like that's a problem.
And by the way, it's not like Plumlee is a leading big man in the league.
No.
He's just been a staple guy around the league.
He does a job.
Name. Yeah.
He's a guy that does a job. And listen, my point is that the Gobert thing is going to be a conversation all season long. When you make $41 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you are reliant on people missing shots to get yours, that's a problem. He's not a guy that you can count on late in games. Yes, he makes a difference defensively. He is, in my opinion, perennially, which means every year, one of the best defensive players in the NBA.
No doubt.
That's not good enough anymore. You in this league at this time, you need your bigs to shoot the three and have a mid-range game. You need more than just clean up dunks. And everybody keeps talking about how he leads the NBA in dunks because that's what he does. That's who
he
is. There's nothing there. I mean, what else is there for Rudy Gobert?
This is like people who say Zion's one of the best players in the league right now because he's got the highest shot percentage in the league.
He's number two in the league in dunks.
Yeah. Like, is it a good thing that he's missing 40% of his 1 foot layups? That's why I say you can, if you're just going off the numbers. Yeah, they'll tell you a story, but they're not actually indicative of reality. And that's really the struggle that I think Jazz fans go through. And so I really truly don't want it to feel like we're constantly negative on the Jazz, but we're not gonna sit here on this show anyway and talk about how great Donovan Mitchell is and how great Rudy Gobert is and how this team is just, you know, amazing. They won 10 in a row and lost one and now they won one and everything's kosher. Great. Great. We're 20% through the NBA season. Where are we going to be 60 games into the season? Oh, I know. We're going to be the fifth seed battling to be the three seed, just like they always are.
Yep. Kyle says you guys conveniently left out the first game where he had 29 and 20 in the back-to-back against Dallas. Well, we didn't, though. I mean,
that's what
we're talking about.
We talked about it. The reason he had 29 and 20 in that game is because Donovan Mitchell was out in that game, and they made a choice to feature him. And what did they do? Mike Conley probed the paint. And they essentially just played the lob game all night long.
And they got beat hard in the fourth quarter in that first game.
And so that's
remember
what I say,
that.
Like, find me. I love this. I love that someone brought this up. Go ahead. Live on the 29 and 20 game. But go and find me another game or go and find me five other games where he's put up anything more than 30 points. Find me those games because it's few and far between. If Rudy Gobert, and I'm serious about this, if Rudy Gobert gave this team 29 and 20
every
nightly,
night.
Holy crap, we're having a different conversation, right? Like, that's a different conversation than, what did he do? 11 and 9 and 7 or whatever you said it was last night? Like,
yeah,
that's just not
good enough.
9
and 7. And if you look at Rudy's game log, obviously that game was the highlight of his season, But that's one of the best games of his career. And, mm-hmm. and Kyle, with all due respect, I guess my point is, hey, man, it's cool that he puts up 29 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
Find me a game where they hit their full complement of five starters where he put up 29 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how this team works. This team lives and dies on the three ball, which, by the way, why does he get a lot of dunks? Because they shoot a lot of long-range jumpers, and he's the biggest bro on the court. So he's going to get a lot of rebounds. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's what he does really well. What I'm saying is, when you're in the NBA Finals and you're in the fourth quarter, he's not going to have a role.
Does anybody really believe that if the Jazz got to the NBA Finals and they were playing the Lakers, that Anthony Davis versus Rudy would be a good thing? No, because that's not the matchup it would be. It would be Gasol versus Gobert, and then it would be Royce O'Neal versus Anthony Davis, which would not be good.
Yeah, I don't even know what the other option would. I mean, I guess you could have Bogdanovich play AD.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, so I understand this pisses Jazz fans off. I get it. We're not coming at this conversation from the idea of like,
hey, how can we piss off Jazz fans?
Yeah, like we're not trying to do that, but you're also not going to come again, and I'm not trying to boast about us, but I am simply saying you're not going to find a show here that's going to say, yeah, he put up 29 and 20 and he's an all-star and everything's cool.
Yep.
That was good enough when you were I don't know what he was making annually before this contract, but that was good enough when you weren't making $41 million a year. Now it's not good enough because the expectations have gone up, as they should. If you're going to make the money, expectations go up. This is why LeBron is held to such a high standard. This is why Kobe was held to such a high standard. This is why Paul George and Kawhi and the players of that cut who get paid what Rudy's getting paid are held to such a high standard. Would it be good enough if Donovan Mitchell gave you 9 points and one assist, making what he's going to make on the next extension he gets? No, it's not. Nobody's going to say that. And so that's why I say it can't be, hey, you know, 40 million plus player guy on another team has these super high expectations, but then we're going to look right here in our backyard at Rudy Gobert and we're not going to have those expectations. That's just not, like, we can't have that. And that's why I'm saying the goal can't be the fifth seed or the third seed or basically anything but the one seed in the West. That's not good enough for this team anymore. They're at a place where they've been bad, and we've literally been, I hope you people realize this, we've been talking about the Jazz since like 5 years ago, right? Like since Donovan came into the league, we've been talking about how they've been basically a six seed and they've improved now to a three seed or maybe a two seed depending on how the playoffs play out.
Man, it's the same conversation every year.
Yeah.
They're good. They're not great.
Yeah.
They're on the cusp. They're just not good enough.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. Make sure you find us on YouTube, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, and smash that subscribe button. Really appreciate your support. We have really, the channel has been growing very nicely. We couldn't do that without you. So please, please help us grow this channel. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up button on all of our videos. You get highlights every day. Obviously, you get the full live stream every day. But, you know, we have a playlist that's got all of our highlights with our major topics. Whether you want NBA, NFL, politics, you name it. It's all right here on The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, every morning live on YouTube. Let's switch gears and talk a little America's pastime. The Super Bowl is coming up now in, 4 days, right?
Isn't it amazing we're already at the Super
Bowl?
We're
already at the Super
Bowl. Like, it was just October, now we're in the Super Bowl.
And we're at the Super Bowl. And so the question is, with the what is thought to be, and by default, is the biggest event in American sports history, the Super Bowl. Every year, it's the biggest event.
Yep.
Is the NFL still the biggest sport in the country? Is it the most popular sport in the country? And I know that seems like a crazy question, but with the pandemic, one thing that I think not enough people are talking about is that if there was a silver lining for the NBA in the pandemic, it was that the NBA playoffs and the NBA finals got pushed to September and October, which is in the heart of the NFL season. You had your NBA finals that I think went off really well in the bubble. A lot of people were watching NBA basketball in September and October, when usually not very many people at all are watching preseason NBA basketball. So instead of being in preseason, they were in the playoffs and the finals. Then you had about 6 weeks off, and Christmas Day, what did we have on our TVs?
Mm-hmm.
We had NBA tip-off on our TVs. And I think it's kept this this basketball cycle moving, which is how the NFL had really become the dominant property in American sports, because it was year-round. They never took a break. We went from the regular season to the playoffs, to the Super Bowl, to the combine, to the draft, right back in the training camp and mini camps. And you just have this year-round 12-month cycle of NFL news. That's where the NBA's been this year. And it makes me wonder, is the NBA the most popular sport in America right now? I think there's a lot of arguments, especially coming off of the news that ESPN and ABC saw a significant bounce this past weekend in primetime ratings on ABC, the Lakers and the Celtics did huge numbers on ABC. I don't know, Jake, is the NFL still America's favorite sport?
I'd be really surprised if it wasn't. I think you make a lot of great points, and I think a lot of those points have led to this place where the NBA, there's no question the NBA has picked up people, like has picked up fans, has picked up its following. There's no doubt about that. But when I think about, like, do people in reality, pandemic or otherwise, do they get together to watch NBA games? Like, do we do the Sunday party for the primetime game on ABC? And so to me, no, we don't. I mean, yes, you and I do, sure. But like the average household, no, they don't. Oh, hey, we live in Chicago. Hey, do you want to go get a drink? The Bears are going to be on and we can catch up. And like, that's why football has always been dominant, because number one, it's an extremely easy sport to understand. It's not rocket science. It's not difficult. You know, it's just easy to understand, number one. But then number two, the product on the field is really good. So to me, I guess the direct answer is no. I still think the NFL is number one, but I think the NBA is having a really nice run because of all the points you made. And I think the challenge, the last thing I'd say is that the challenge the NFL has in front of it is that it needs to consistently have young talent come into the league and splash, because the NBA has that. The NBA has young guys that come in and make a brand for themselves right away. Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, the list goes on. There's a ton of guys that have come into the league. You know, LaMelo Ball has been a sensation. So the NFL, you know, you think of young guys and you're thinking, okay, quarterbacks, right? Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a different situation. But overall, brand versus brand in the big picture, I still think the NFL takes it.
You know, I think obviously TV ratings and viewership and fan attendance, the NFL walks away with it. But I think the NBA has something that the NFL does not. They have the street.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA's got the street. The NBA's got the shoe culture. The NBA's got the inner city. It's got the suburbs. It's got the kids. It's got the adults. We still play basketball. Well, thank you, Mr. Pandemic. We were playing basketball 5-6 days a week. Like, basketball is a sport, especially here in Utah, basketball is huge.
Yeah.
I think football is still the number one sport in this state.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the NBA is coming. It is now the second most popular sport in the country, by according to Gallup. 37% of sports fans say the NFL is king.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a distant second, 11% say the NBA,
right,
which has now passed soccer and baseball.
Yeah,
and popularity. And I think the this year, I'll be interested to see how the TV numbers in total do for the NFL,
mm-hmm,
because nobody could go to games. And one of the questions the NFL's asked on a regular basis is, hey, does our TV coverage limit our fan attendance? So you would think, well, hey, NFL fan numbers or attendance numbers have been down.
Right.
Right? ESPN had been hemorrhaging subscribers. Well, let's see how those TV numbers are now. Like, the ratings are really interesting. These numbers, Barrett Sports Media, who is, one of the preeminent sports analysts in this country, Jason Barrett, put out a thing on Twitter about the ratings for Saturday night primetime on ABC between the Celtics and the Lakers. And the thing that I find so fascinating about these numbers are that they average 2.74 million viewers. That's plus 16% year over year. Which is huge. It peaked at 3.5 million viewers.
Yeah.
And I think about companies that have struggled during the pandemic. There's no brand in sports that has struggled more than ESPN.
Right.
With layoffs, with revenue, with the picture in totality.
Yeah.
has been bleak for ESPN because of the pandemic. And I think to see these numbers for the NBA, and you'll see on ABC games, it'll say the NBA on ESPN.
Uh-huh.
The NBA is a major property for the four-letter network.
Yeah.
And I think that ESPN really needed the NBA to do big numbers on Saturday primetime.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thrilled for the folks in Bristol because it's been a really difficult year.
Yep.
But I'm also thrilled for the NBA. And I'm thrilled for the fan base. I'm thrilled for kids because I think still to this day, LeBron James is a huge magnet in the NBA. And I look at what, you know, the profile of Anthony Davis has grown since he moved to LA with the Lakers. I look at the Celtics' popularity.
Yep.
Now, I wish that they would contend for an Eastern Conference championship. They're not, and they're not going to. But I think a big brand matchup like that still brings the boys to the yard.
Yep.
And I think that's huge. What is going on with baseball? How do you fix baseball at this point?
I think the struggle is always going to be for baseball that it's a complicated game and it's a slower game. And so people don't appreciate the nuances and what it takes to be a big leaguer. And I think that hurts them. You know, it's like the NHL. The NHL is seemingly an easy game to understand. But then you ask an average fan and it's not an easy game to understand. Hey, what do all the lines mean? Why'd they blow the whistle here? What is, you know, roughing versus charging? What is boarding versus charging? Like, you know, all this stuff. And so I think, again, that's why I go back to when you ask the question, we talk about this, like what's the most popular sport in our country, but what's the easiest sport to understand? What's the most entertaining sport? Well, it's the NFL, right?
I think the most, and again, maybe this is just personal taste.
Mm-hmm.
I think A plus B equals C is basketball.
Well, for me personally, it's basketball, but I'm saying that I've never been a huge, huge, like, oh my God, football's on. I better go watch it, even if it's
nobody's state
versus nobody's state. You know, like, I just, overall, like, the NHL and Major League Baseball are two sports that are just lower end sports. Major League Baseball has always struggled with branding and, like, understanding how to get to that inner city kid or whatever. Like, the NBA is easy because it's a cheap sport. A basketball is not expensive, and you can shoot it into a wicker basket if you want to.
It is culturally ingrained.
Yeah. Yeah.
And NBA basketball is culturally ingrained in cities across this country.
Yeah.
And the difference is that if you look at the NFL, NFL viewership numbers are in the tens of millions. If you look at the AFC Championship game, it did 45 million viewers.
Crazy.
I mean, everybody watches football. The Super Bowl will be one of the most watched sporting events and really one of the most watched TV shows of the year.
As it is every year.
Yeah. So I think it's very difficult to overcome that. I don't ever see a time when 100 million people watch a single NBA game.
I would agree with that.
And I think the difference is in the NBA Finals, you have a 7-game series. For the NFL, it's a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
it's one game.
Yep.
Whoever wins the Super Bowl wins the championship, said and done. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge advantage for the NFL because it's like this penultimate moment.
Right.
Where I've got to see this because this is where the championship will be decided.
Right.
This, and if you think about the best players in NFL history, that's easy to name.
Right.
You can name 20 of the greatest quarterbacks ever right off the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do that in the NBA.
Yeah.
Can't do that in Major League Baseball. Who's the best Major League Baseball player ever? Who's the best NBA player ever?
I would tell you it's Michael Jordan.
There you go. Who's the best NFL player ever?
That's tough. Brady, I guess.
Probably Tom Brady, right? That's the problem with baseball.
Yeah.
That's the issue for, you know, you look at the NFL, it's easy. It's Tom Brady. You look at the NBA, it's easy. It's Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Those are household names.
Yeah.
Right? Is Ty Cobb a household name? Is Babe Ruth a household name?
No.
Right?
Not anymore.
And you would think Barry Bonds, but steroids completely killed that guy.
Well, and I think the trouble is, too, that Major League Baseball has trouble with the young people. So, you know, young folks, kids, you know, they don't have, you know, kids are playing baseball. That's not the issue. It's just, hey, like, oh man, I want to grow up and be Mike Trout, or I want to grow up and be, you know, whoever, you know, whereas I there's a ton of people that we played at the gym with who wanted to be LeBron.
Yeah, well, and the difference is, I think what you said makes a lot of sense. It's a lot more accessible. If you want to go put a hoop on the driveway, let's do it. Let's pay $100, get a hoop at you know, a Shields.
Yeah.
And we'll play some hoop on the track. Like the kids across the street from us here in South Jordan.
Yeah. Hours of the day on the weekend, just outside.
There are basketball hoops all over this place.
Yeah.
So my thing is, I think fewer people are playing touch tackle football in their front yard and more people are playing basketball in the driveway.
Yeah.
That to me, and I think that's where we're going. That's where we are going. So it's just an interesting little minutia conversation. So, make sure you follow. I almost got through an entire show not saying follow us on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show on YouTube. Should we talk BYU in the honor code?
Yeah.
This is ugly. This is as ugly as it gets. Meet Tinder app. Girl on Tinder. Guy that plays football at BYU on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
Guy attacks girl on Tinder for her pro-choice beliefs and attacks her savagely. I will leave the rest to, I don't even know this girl's name.
Her first name is Steph. Her last name, I believe how you pronounce it, is Dupar. I hope that's right.
Steph Dupar.
Yeah.
Here's what she said happened on Tinder with a BYU football player.
Representative Yoho put his finger in my face. He called me disgusting. He called me crazy. He called me out of my mind. He called me dangerous. Representative Yoho called me, and I quote, a fucking bitch. I am here because I have to show my parents that I am their daughter. And that they did not raise me to accept abuse from men.
So that's the first video. Ugh. Okay, so that's the beginning. Then, and let me scroll down here. This website is very busy.
Yes.
So
that's a football player that she's accusing of doing that.
So the guy's name, and it's all over the internet. His name is Wes Wright. He's a football player at BYU. This girl has pro-choice. You can... On Tinder, apparently, she did screenshots. You can do, like bubbles, and you can write things on your profile,
hashtags.
Like hashtags and stuff like that or whatever. So she had, BLM, pro-choice, just, like, stuff that's going on in our society of her beliefs. Like, okay, that's fine. Like, nothing, like, I don't see any issue with that.
Yeah.
And this guy literally messaged
her.
The first thing he said, and this is the screenshot she shared, the first thing that Wes messaged Steph was, get your baby murdering ass out of here. That was literally the first message just starting the conversation out.
Oof.
And so he said that and apparently said a bunch of other stuff in the conversation, which she has not shared. But then, so this is part two of the video. This is kind of like an update she released the next day after putting out the first video.
The incredible amount of support. I really wasn't expecting this when I posted yesterday. I am never going to tolerate that kind of disrespect from men, and I do believe in making sure that this isn't just like about me and about this football player, but I have friends who are scared to report sexual harassment and sexual violence, and I want to let them know through my example that nobody ever disrespecting you is okay, especially a privileged white male. I have reported him to the honor code office, but unfortunately because of that, they won't tell you what happens. I reported him to BYU football, the dean of students, and I haven't gotten a response from BYU football, and all BYU did on Instagram was refer me to the dean of students, who just referred me back to the honor code office where I already put in a report, and I reported him on Tinder. I don't know why I'm feeling like Tinder is probably going to do more than BYU is.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
First of all, is what Wes Wright said to this girl an honor code violation? Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think it means that Wes Wright cannot play football anymore. That's what this means. When you attack a woman in that nature, that's not who BYU is. And I am not Mormon. I am not LDS. I know the honor code like the back of my hand. Because here in Utah, when you work in the media, you better. This is an honor code violation. It's one of the worst. I think that what Wes Wright did is ridiculous. I think that it's okay to have pro-life views. I think it is okay to express those pro-life views. But when you attack another person because of their beliefs, when you tell somebody to get their, quote, baby murdering ass out of here, you can't play football at BYU.
Yeah.
That's an honor code violation, and it's a heinous one. And there's so many people that are vilifying this girl for reporting him to the honor code office. Why is she wrong here? This girl has done nothing wrong. And I don't know her. I have no particular attachment to her. I just know she's a human being that has a belief, and she should be respected for that.
Yeah.
Just like Wes should be respected for his belief. And this is the issue with a lot of what goes on at BYU, and frankly, with the Mormon church and the LDS community on the whole. There is this elitist attitude, and there is this elitist belief system. And I will even go as far as to say, I think there is an elitist stigma around the LDS community that, oh, we're better than you. Get your baby murdering ass out of here.
Right.
And I just know too many LDS people who are not that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know too many people at BYU and affiliated at BYU who went to BYU who are not that way.
Right.
And that's the biggest issue with what Wes did here, is that he stained the reputation of BYU. This has gone viral. This has gone international.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the a lot of news sites in the UK picked this up. This is a problem for Wes.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes owes this woman an apology. Wes should not play football. And I don't think he should be. There's a lot of people saying he should be kicked out of BYU. He should not be kicked out of
she
BYU.
She wants tangible action taken against Wes. Like, she wants.
As she should.
I don't know. This is just my opinion, but I would assume that she's looking for like a suspension, or, you know, even a kicked out of the program level action or something of that nature. She's looking for that. She wants an apology from Wes.
What has their interaction been, though? This is what I don't understand.
That's the story, though. They haven't had interaction outside of what he said to her. Like, so.
But how she like talked about how he was sticking his finger in her face and.
Yeah, like. I don't know. There's not a lot of backstory as far as what their interaction is outside of Tinder, but
have they met outside of Tinder?
No, I don't believe so. No, not that I've seen.
Well, let's play that first video again, because it is clearly the most salacious one. And again, this is Wes Wright. He's a defensive back at BYU. And I see everybody just tuning in on YouTube on this. He's a defensive back at BYU. He clearly used this as a Tinder app,
mm-hmm.
which my guess is that if you ask any elder at BYU, hey, do you think I should be using the Tinder app? I'm going to probably say they say no. But here, no there. Wes, I'm hoping, is single, because if you're single and on Tinder, cool. If you're not and you're on Tinder. But anyway, the point is, he went after a woman that was pro-choice and essentially attacked her character and her person, and this is how she describes it.
Nobody pray for me. It been out there for me.
Representative Yoho put his finger in my face. He called me disgusting. He called me crazy. He called me out of my mind. He called me dangerous. Representative Yoho called me, and I quote, a fucking bitch. I am here because I have to show my parents that I am their daughter and that they did not raise me to accept abuse from men.
Well, I don't think anybody says that you should, I don't know. I don't think anybody says that you should accept abuse from men. Is this tantamount to abuse?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is abuse. There's no doubt about it. It's verbal abuse, you know? And if we're being serious about it, the only reason that it's getting this much run is because he plays at BYU. I mean, this type of thing happens all the time, and it doesn't get talked about. You know, I mean, people, you know, dating apps are renowned for people saying awful things to each other. So, you know, my point here is that you know, she's, I'm not saying that she's out looking for some kind of handout, but what I am saying is that the reason this is such a high profile thing is because he plays at BYU and he's a football player. And so when you have stature and you do something this stupid, like that's the part that I can't get over. You didn't have to say this. Like you, like there, like something in his brain said, hey, she's got pro choice on her profile. Yeah, I better put her in her place. I mean, what does that look like? Like, what did you think was going to happen? You know, and then you go on to like, allegedly, she hasn't released the screenshots, but allegedly he goes on to, you know, tell her to F off and like, she's horrible and like just all this heinous stuff. So I don't know, man. It's not good. It's really not
good.
Well,
we'll see what happens. I think the Rep Yoho stuff is kind of ridiculous. I mean, I just don't think there's no reason to bring his name into this, but I look at this whole thing and this is the elitist mentality at BYU. Mm. What Wes Wright said to this woman, it just plays on the stereotype of the elitist attitude at BYU, and it's terrible for them. It's terrible for the reputation at BYU. It not creates a stigma, it furthers the stigma. That's my biggest issue with it. That story's on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. A couple more minutes left here on the show today. Let's talk about Jeff Bezos. Stepped down as a CEO at Amazon yesterday, arguably ending a reign of the most popular, powerful, and I think most successful company in American history, at Amazon, which he built from the ground up with the help of his wife, who wrote their business plan, started it as a book reselling website, and it has turned into the number one e-commerce site in the world. When I say Jeff Bezos, and you think legacy of Jeff Bezos, what comes to your mind?
Well, I mean, certainly he's one of the most innovative people we've ever seen step foot on the planet. You know, like, I think what he's been able to do is it exemplifies the American dream more than maybe any other example I've ever seen. I mean, you're talking about a guy who started something tiny, a grain of sand, and turned himself into a 100 billionaire doing it. And so that's why when I talk about legacy with him, I just think that it's all about entrepreneurship and it's all about building something from the ground up. And I don't know when he started, whether that was in his 30s or whatever, but he's been doing this thing for a long time now. And I think it just goes to show you, like, in this country, it can be done, but you have to have the, frankly, you got to have the balls to do it, and you got to be okay, you know, recreating something 100 times before it works.
Yeah. And I think obviously the Amazon story is well known. He started Amazon in 1994 as a book reseller. He was 30 years old at that time. When he hit his home run, he was 30 years old. And I think Jeff Bezos is the most successful entrepreneur in the history of this country. But I guess the question is Amazon good for our country? Are conglomerates like Amazon? Because Amazon is not just Amazon.com. Obviously, AWS, their cloud service. I mean, Amazon.
To behemoth.
They do so many different things. They deliver products for people. They move freight. It's incredible. But this is the thing that I think worries me about Amazon, and this is the same thing I say about Google. These companies have so much of our personal information.
Mm-hmm.
So much. That, no, I don't think companies like Amazon are great for our country. I think if Amazon was regulated to the point where, hey, you can be an e-commerce site, but this AWS has to be broken off into a separate company and the two don't talk, okay, that's great.
Right.
Because when you take all of the information that Amazon has on us, think about the HomePod. Alexa. Think about the HomePod, right?
She heard that.
Yeah.
That's how good she is at listening. She heard that.
That was a whisper. Like, she's talking in the background. Think about how much she knows about you. Alexa knows more about you than just about any other bot in the world. Any other human? Alexa knows more about you than any other human.
Yeah.
There is no question about that. She knows your habits. She knows your music, your shopping history, your credit card numbers, your credit score. She knows all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary. And that's why I think this Google antitrust thing is such a big deal.
Yeah, by the way, the CEO of Google got grilled the other day.
And he should. I think Google absolutely is. It started as a good thing, and I think Google's out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, they absolutely control what you see every day on your phone.
Yeah.
Google controls that. I mean, and obviously I'm biting the hand that feeds me because who owns YouTube?
Yeah.
Google owns YouTube. Gmail, Google. Google.com, Alphabet. That's all. It's all Google.
Yeah.
They know more than Alexa knows about you. And you use both of those platforms every single day.
Because you don't have a choice. What else are you going to use? Are you going to use Bing?
No, Bing?
No. Who uses Bing?
Come on. Bing's a joke. Actually, Mrs. Monty likes Bing.
But I'm just saying. Like,
But she's also the freakazoid that uses an Android phone. So, I mean, you can't really. She has no credibility once you find out she uses an Android.
Well, of course.
I mean.
Of course not.
She's getting an iPhone 13 whether she wants one or not. Anyway, the point is, she's sitting like 5 feet away. Real quick, we've got 4 minutes to play the MyPillow guy. Should we play this?
Yeah, let me get that pulled up really quick.
We got to play this MyPillow guy video.
Let me get it.
This motherfucker crazy. Ah! I absolutely got hammered yesterday in a DM about my cursing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about how much I curse on the show.
Okay, I got the video. Okay, let's listen to the MyPillow guy go off. This is on, what is this on, Newsmax, I think it was, right?
This with Newsmax tried to shut down the MyPillow guy. That's how bad this is. Newsmax, who usually fellates Donald Trump on a nightly basis, tried to shut down, that's probably over the top, tried to shut down the MyPillow guy, and it got cray-cray.
What happened with your Twitter account and the company page?
Well, first, mine was taken down because we have all the election fraud with these Dominion machines. We have 100% proof. And then when they took it down about 3 weeks ago, and then when I put it back up,
Mike, thank you very much. You're talking about machines that we at Newsmax have not been able to verify.
Don't sue us.
Those kinds of allegations. We just want to let people know that there's nothing substantive that we've seen. And let me read you something there. While there were some clear evidence of some cases of vote fraud and election irregularities, the election results in every state were certified, and Newsmax accepts the results as legal and final. The courts have also supported that view. So we wanted to talk to you about canceling culture, if you will. We don't want to relitigate the allegations you're making, Mike, because we understand, this
just goes on. Eventually, the Newsmax guy literally gets out of his chair and walks off the set.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all terrified that they're going to get sued. Why do people keep putting the MyPillow guy,
don't
Mike Lindell, for MyPillow? Why do you put this guy on TV?
Because maybe you want to.
Well, it's not really on TV. It's Newsmax, and nobody watches Newsmax.
What's Newsmax? I don't watch that.
It is the Donald Trump Fellatio Network.
Come on.
I should stop. Anyway, the point is, it got ugly. I don't understand, like, why Dominion hasn't sued Mike Lindell for MyPillow. Why they haven't sued him yet, I have no idea.
I don't know either. They've got a great case. I mean, totally a great case for defamation. It's clean cut. You know, you couldn't really ask for much better.
They're going to sue him.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Please stop putting Mike Lindell for MyPillow on TV. Just don't. Don't do it because it just isn't worth it.
MyPillow.
Don't put Mike Lindell for MyPillow. You have to elongate the, oh, MyPillow. But make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show on YouTube. Just go to themontyshow.com. Takes you right to YouTube and click subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Leave us a comment. Really appreciate that. It helps the channel grow, which we are doing. Until tomorrow, say, I'm the MyPillow guy.
I'm the MyPillow guy.